Blog Talk Radio.
Masonic Home Companion, and we're back together again for more mayhem and discussion about things Masonic that have relevance to members of this worldwide order. I know every time I say that, it sounds much more. It sounds like there's always a subtext, always some type of conspiracy going, and I hear that. But here's the. The counterpoint, we're not that bright. We're not up to no good. We're here to try and make the best of a situation and the same way that you are. So sit back in your easy chair and grab a tumbler of your favorite beverage or sip a cup of tea here with me this morning. And this is a remarkable, just an absolutely remarkable day. It's the 31st day of May in 2015. The 151st day of the year. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this, does it? There's only 214 days left to get your New Year's celebrations together. Make it count. Don't be going to sleep and make it seem like it's every other day. It isn't. These are things that underline our lives. And when you decide that it's no longer important, then that's your choice. Life is as rollicking and as energetic as you need and want it to be. It's as interesting and curious as you need and want it to be. And there's no end of wonderful and amazing things going on around us. So sit back and get into it. 21 days away from solstice, we don't pay as much attention to these things, these types of events today, as we once did, but we know about them. The antiquarians amongst you out there, and thank you very much for tuning in and supporting the program. You're well aware that of the changes that have occurred in our general perspective, and I want to talk a bit more candidly with you about that today. And I have a reading here somewhere close at hand. Yeah, I do. So we're going to pick up some of the work about the metaphysical traditions of Freemasonry, the stuff that I think is more interesting than going over the same boilerplate. Boilerplate's important. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be annoying any of you who think that any of the experts on boilerplate out there. Doing the basics. Doing your scales, if you're anything, you practice the basics, you do them very well, and you maintain them. That keeps your dexterity, your flexibility, and your sense of what? Would you say that je ne sais quoi? That sense of expression and with the notes of life. So here we are. I've got some information, quotes from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Hadn't had him up here on the show. I know, I do tend to enjoy the older cultures and the older parts of the world more because we can see what happens to the leaves on those trees when the trees are thousands of years old. And here in this country, we are a relatively young culture. We're still getting over what we've done to the indigent populations. In countries of our, or many of us came from, our family lines came from other places. Most all of us can retrace that. Not everybody, but most of us can trace those family lines where this type of pillage and displacement happened so long into our past, but it did happen, that we can conveniently forget it. And we could look at people that carry on the celebration of those old battles as oddities, as people needing to fulfill some craving inside of them that defines them as dominant. Because I see the Americans are getting into Mayo Cinco Mayo, you know, the fifth, a battle that happened in the past. For what? So you can establish that you have some type of military dominance? Get over yourself. This is the 21st century. The military is no longer in charge of anything. It's the media. It's the NGOs. It's the international corporations. Oh, my vote doesn't count? Here's a flash. Didn't count for a long time, boys. The power that's out there that's making decisions and influencing the way we live, it's circling around. It's the shark circling in the water around the euro and the Deutschmark and the dollar and the yen and the ruble. See, you know, it's like we have to, do we stick head back in sand? Well, I'm part of an order that's proud to stick head back in sand. I'm going to illustrate a little bit about that complication today and answer that that puzzle, the puzzled look that seems to be on the face of just before Masons, when the Masons are asked the hard questions, the reaction is first this nanosecond puzzlement, followed very, very quickly by probably a temper outburst of some sort, like, you know, the audacity to actually think out loud and ask questions. Oh my, you know, we can't just have that kind of thing going around in a, well, of course we can, and we always did. It's just been going on behind people's hands in whispers, and I think that's tedious. But it's always been there. It's always been there. Don't be thinking any differently. I think that we can realize that over the course of history, the groups and relationships that we have today have always been the case. What we eat and or the jobs that we have, how far we're able to move between our place of birth and city. The conditions that our families live in, that's changed. The culture has changed around us, but the relationships between men has been consistent. Friends are friends, enemies are enemies, people reconcile all the time, life goes on. And so we have to be able to stay up with it. I want to ask you, the think tank out there, I want to ask you your question. I hope you're all polished up and you have all your baubles and beads on and you're looking your best, really? That's what it takes to define you, your character? Well. I'm talking to the group of Masons listening into this who don't have to look around to others to define their self-worth. They have the confidence, not the stupidity, but I'm saying the confidence to frankly assess their own abilities and inabilities, that balance point. The others are just caught up in that immaturity of having to say everything that they do, everything that comes out of their cake hole is wonderful, and it's worth, we should have scribes following them around, writing down everything they say, because they have answers to all the major problems of the world. So those folks don't interest, you're not going to find this conversation very interesting. So apologize to you. You know, you've already got the answers. We're still trying to mess around and sort out the big questions in life. So you've got the answers. Bless your hearts. Aren't you clever? Here we go. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, I want to ask you, you heard me, we've talked on this show about Greek philosophy, and I know some of you out there, you're tipping a pint and you're saying, oh, gee, do you have any questions there made about Greek philosophy? And I can just sense it when I walk past you. We're busy getting on with the demands of life, and often we just, like anybody else, we don't really have the, we don't realize the distractions that are in front of us. Now, there were cultures in the past where every single day had some level of devotion, and citizenship was markedly different than what it is today. there you fought for rights. Nothing was ascribed. Nothing was taken for granted because you had to fight literally and physically for those rights. Anyway, physically, metaphorically. The question I'll put to you that dominated, the single question that it dominated Greek philosophy, what would you say it is? Something like, who am I? You know, what's my purpose? That kind of thing. Here, I'll give you something that just takes a little sideways. You can go and Google the bark off this tree. How about what is the best way for a human being to live? Now, just generally, I know you can say nasty things about this answer, but the best way, the general answer that the Greeks came up with was to the question, what is the best way for a human being to live? Obeying nature. Now, this shifted the question a bit. Now they're asking about human nature, yeah? But there were different ideas about human nature that led to the creation of different philosophical schools. Now, that's fairly easy for us to sort of follow that path. Cynics, they came up with three, we generally came up, you realize now, three concepts basic to the philosophies. I'll talk just this, the philosophical schools. Bear with me here. The cynics believed that human beings could live best by attempting to live as simply as animals do. The name is derived from the Greek word for dog, because a life as free and simple as a dog's was their end goal. Now, think of this. Take this seriously. If you're the ones out there that have, you're the people that have all the answers already, well, this is just going to sound ridiculous. But the cynic philosophy is based on three primary ideas or concepts: independence, austerity, and shamelessness. Now, all of that, you know, fear-mongering and crap that we experience here in North America is constant. So this would be an undoubted challenge to that, to our cultures here: independence, austerity, and shamelessness. Now think about it. It's to say that they thought that true nature was corrupted by civilization. Because we quickly become pompous and arrogant and selfish. And by abandoning the forms of civilization, we might cleanse ourselves of these evils. And this might seem a little bit silly. Stories about cynics eating raw meat and sleeping in the streets with the wild dogs. Yeah, it didn't do, you know. See, everybody's got, you know, they're going to throw mud at anything. But there were some serious motives behind it. Now, asceticism is a part of all major philosophical traditions. Now, think of the Brahmins and the monks. And this is just the expression of it found in Greek culture, asceticism. The Stoics believe that all human lives are shaped by forces that are beyond our control. Now, think about that. How does that rest with you? It wasn't fate necessarily, but chains of cause and effect. Chains. Now, I know more than a few of you think about waves and loops, and you get really excited about contemporary physics, don't you? I know this. But think about this. They believed that there were chains of cause and effect. Chains, because, you know, you could think, do we have a chain that goes back to the first moment of our birth? Well, in a sense, you think about it, there are cause and effect links. We have lived, we've been that constant thread every day of our, every moment of existence. Don't get me started. Don't ask me what the moment is. I digress. So the Stoics believe that all human lives were shaped by forces beyond our control, right? Not fate, but the chains and cause and effect that we can often do little to alter or avoid, and that most humans choose not to accept this simple fact. Now, we've all seen this, the difficulty. It's like, you know, the odds, the mathematics of life. the mathematics of life doesn't care if a person is a blue-eyed Mason or a brown-eyed Mason or has gray hair or has blonde hair. The math is the objectivity of life. Things happen. Trees grow, trees age, trees fall down. Seeds germinate, new plants and growth occur, trees grow, life goes on. And now you and I ascribe a certain, sentimentality to the things in life. And we cling to, in our minds, we have history that accumulates. And as the years go by, we often will begin to think that we're forgetting things without actually noticing that the file cabinets are becoming more and the files are more full of more information. And in a sense, we have this notion that we should be able to recall every event. And we probably can. It is filed in there. But how is it ordered? How is it filed? And unless you can answer that question, it's really hard to go and pick a select file of any given moment. But we can do that. We know there's different techniques to do that. Is it it's not infallible. You know, it's an imperfect kind of a science right now because we're only scratching the surface of all of that type of metaphysics, I guess you might call it. So the question here, brethren, why do most humans choose not to accept that simple fact that our lives are shaped by forces that are beyond our control? Oh, well, there we go. How dare I saying that every one of us isn't in complete control of our lives? Yeah, right. I would think we would be really stuffy and do just an awful job if that were the case. If everybody was in charge of their life and writing out, you know, constructing this script for themselves, I don't think it would demonstrate the highest qualities of the human spirit. And that's my lament. That's one of my laments. And perhaps that's one of my conceits. But I don't think I'm the only one that's alone doing that. So thinking that, why most humans choose not to accept this simple fact. That's a hard one to brush off. All of you with the answers to life that are being quite condescending and tuning in the show, that's fine. I absolutely agree with everything that you've got to say. I just wasn't fortunate enough to have your writings and your thoughts on these subjects, so I have my own. They thought that by accepting the things we can't change, it's almost like that mantra that the AA uses, isn't it? Learn to accept. They thought that if we could learn to accept the things we can't change, we would come into harmony. The idea, the word is ataraxia, which means harmony, ataraxia. Harmony, if we did that, if we accepted that our lives are influenced and shaped by forces beyond our control, that we would come into harmony with the way the universe actually works. Now, I think to be able to do that, we have to peel off those layers of conceit and arrogance and pomposity, and we have to be able to realize that whether there's no good or bad to this, it just is. And can we just take a look at the universe with us being a part of that as it is? No good, no bad, just as it is, just to look at it and ponder that. This is why stoic is used in everyday speech to mean a person who is uncomplaining and tough. Now, that was their ideal. You don't complain about it. Well, I'm not happy when something happens and a friend develops a tumor and dies. I'm not happy about it. Am I thinking that I should have done something differently? Well, I always like to think that. You know, maybe I should have been more devout to the gods and made more sacrifices or planted my corn according to the proper calendar. you know, instead of trying to be a little bit early. Epicureanism, though, is a little bit different. So, and we all know the person's uncomplaining and tough. And a lot of us grew up with men in our lives, men and women in our lives, that exhibited those characteristics. It almost made us think that there was no conversation between adults and children, you know, no teaching, that you really had to learn by your mistakes and a cuff in the ear if you needed a little bit of motivation. Epicureanism, though, is a bit different. It followed the teachings of a single person fairly closely. And instead of a few, it's generally distorted and attacked by people who deliberately misunderstand it. Epicurus was a teacher, and he argued that pleasure and pain were the basic human experiences. So in order to live well, it's necessary to minimize pain and maximize pleasure. So most critics jump on the latter, which is why Epicureanism is associated with people who eat rich food and drink a lot of wine. But the actual teachings of Epicurus were simply condemned such people. It's not logical to eat and drink more than you need, because it'll simply give you a terrible stomach ache and a hangover the next day. And trading a little pleasure for a lot of pain is irrational. Aside from this pain-pleasure principle, he had the notion that the worst kinds of pain are caused by fear, especially the fear of death. Got your attention, didn't I? Epicurus argued that the greatest good was to a state of tranquility, freedom from fear. He used the term harmony and ataraxia too. He had four cures. Now think about what he's doing for us, saying that we can live a better life, understanding this pleasure-pain principle, but the worst kind of pain is caused by fear. And this man is trying to help us. So he argued that the greatest good was to be in a state of tranquility and freedom from fear. He had four cures for it. Cures. These are things that would attack that fear. I know you might have your own four, but let me share his version with you. Don't fear the gods. They're not real. Don't worry about death. It can't exist while you exist. And it's easy to find food and drink enough. Just enough. Nothing in excess, yeah? His philosophy was aesthetic. The first one tells us that. Don't fear the gods, and they're not real. Richard Dawkins, where are you? Let's have that discussion now. What's real, and how do we understand the god or the gods? If I think about our Hindu brethren, the various facets of the creator are manifest in different symbols and idols. Oh, and we get into that really interesting advertising of the early Christians that anything with an idol was blasphemous. Well, we see where that's gone full circle. Anyway, but I digress again. He gave a riddle. In fact, and it's long been used to argue that the gods, or simply God, cannot logically exist. Well, I'll give you the riddle. It's curious. And man, I wish you were here, sitting here, so you could tell me your thoughts on this. When we're in a serious moment of reflection, when? Not when your moment of importance is cleaning off a golf club and thinking about that sweet, sweet 20-foot putt. But when we have a moment just to consider the more important things in life, like this. This riddle, there are four, he says, there are but four choices. If God is willing to prevent evil but is not able to, then he is not omnipotent. If he is able but not willing, then he is malevolent. if he is both able and willing, then whence cometh evil? If he is neither able nor willing, then why call him God? So if you're understanding this far, bless you, you're a better man than I am. We don't have to get into Epicurean epistemology and other such things, but does it work? The Stoic, the Cynic believed that virtue could be the only good and self-control to be the only means of achieving virtue. The Stoic, if this is founded by Zeno in 308 BC, believing that God determined everything for the best and the virtue is sufficient for happiness. God determined everything for the best and that virtue is sufficient for happiness. It's Roman form. This, you know, this morphed as the Rome, as Rome became involved, advocating the calm acceptance of all occurrences, such as the unavoidable result of divine will or in the natural order. That was Stoic. And, of course, the Epicureans, the follower of Epicureanism, the teachings of Epicurus considered happiness or the avoidance of pain and emotional disturbance to be the highest good and advocated the pursuit of pleasures that can be enjoyed in moderation. If you enjoy pleasures to excess, that's painful. That's not, I'm a product of the intellectual training, my academic training in the 70s, early 70s. And the notion of hedonism came out of this. It completely, you can see when you look at the gentle elements of these concepts, that the notion of hedonism was very much distorted. Pleasure seeking, not balance, pleasure seeking. The indulgence. Well, wasn't that the, doesn't that sum up the 60s and 70s a bit? That was a massive systems correction. That notion of consciousness that came out of that grew into the black movement, the women's movement, and now we see that morphing into the Occupy movement, only on a global level. Amen that Freemasonry is out there having various discussions over the face of the earth. And that our connection isn't based on military. And for all that we have paramilitary and military expatriates as members of the order, they're first and foremost not their background, but their sense as a Mason. On the level. That's what helps us to bind this across the world, is that sense of universality and inclusion. But if you ask, take any one specimen of masonry, take your big tweezers and pick them up off the laboratory table and examine him for his sense of universality, we may be grossly disappointed. We may find all the pettiness of the profane still wrapped up in his meager mind. And that is where we, I say including you and all of us, have failed that brother. We have failed that brother. We have not brought him into the temple, metaphorically speaking. So step with me today into Masonic consciousness and help me to follow this. Did we step out from under the rule of religion? Did we dispose the despot? Did we create the republic? Did we fight for freedom? Wars scar our souls, yet we repeat it. We create the enemy in our mind, don't we? And then we become a murderous lot, and they become a murderous lot, and then it stops, and then it starts. And I refuse to accept that this is the nature of mankind. I refuse to accept that premise. this is the behavior of zealots fueling, becoming so dangerous that good-minded men have to pick up arms to protect. That's sad. Church stains our conscience. Think about that. Church stains our conscience. Whether Christian, Muslim, Jew, church stains our conscience. But what alternative? What alternative? Is the 21st century Mason being launched by access to information into a new, unforeseen level of insight? Are the contemplative Freemasons becoming as prophets of old? Writers have offered so many opinion pieces, it is difficult to keep up with the flow, let alone to ascribe merit. Qualified opinion means far more to all of us than the ramblings of any one of us. But the fork in the road is whether we are satisfied by throwing support behind an opinion on symbols or past events, or follow the one less traveled. Hopefully we can know more and answer more. It's the one less traveled. One theme is clear, I think. There are sacred opinions that need to be studied. For instance, how can we determine decline when we can't agree on success? Oh, the order is declining because the numbers are changing. Really? I don't know that we are in decline. I don't know the principles, the ethics, and values of Freemasonry are in decline. But if you say so, that must make it so. And if 1,000 Masons in a room all agree with you, well, that must make it unchallengeable. That's the absolute fact, isn't it? Except it's wrong. If we step back from the noise and the fray and approach our work with common sense, the work of a Mason, we may have to admit the goals are neither hidden nor obvious. They're a state of mind. Let's pull the rocking chair a little closer to the radio, okay? Next to the roaring fire with a cup of tea nearby. I'll bring the cribbage board for an evening about the revelations that answer your questions. See you soon. Now, the Masons have been operating, I think, under some misconceptions. Now, I've done some study and reading about our roots. And I've been sitting back trying to understand what it is that it's telling me. And I think Masonry, you know how some cities match up with other cities? I think Collingwood is matched with Nagano in Japan, you know, that type of thing that goes on. I think if we look at the Masonic order as this little universe all into itself floating around our star and being influenced by the pull of the planets, moving in that vacuum, that emptiness of space. Don't ask me to figure out what the influences of dark matter are, because I just don't understand that. But there we are, all in this contained bubble. Outside of that is the profane, yeah? How convenient. But they're all out and we're in. I think we've become matched with Venice. Venice, you know, Italy. I'll tell you why. We revel to this day in the achievements of Venice, when at the time it was at the forefront. It was at the cutting edge. It was disemboweling the status quo. It was redefining. the arts, the sciences, politics, power, influence, religion. Once what we study was about a nation on the cutting edge of innovation, the greatest thinkers were invited. Now, I've talked with you, this was an innovation that had been done by an Arab. We know that. We can talk about him. Great, great man. Name doesn't come to mind right now, but it's somewhere in these papers sitting here in front of me. Anyway, Venice. If you think about the influence of the glassblowers on Rafferty, the mathematician. Think about that. And then the time when Venice had the best glassblowers, because they understood, had been experimenting. And it was very tribal. They had been experimenting with different compositions, different chemical compounds to mix with the silicon. So it could get clear glass, crystal. But what we experience today, I think it's the parallel with Freemasonry. Now tell me, help me understand the wrongness in this. Venice is sinking. We celebrate Venice not for what it is today, not for its accomplishments, but this indelible influence that still lingers. I can still feel the inspiration of ancient Venice when I open up the books and study and learn about the Medici and learn about the Michelangelo. And bring those lessons in whatever way I can or need, bring those lessons and that information forward to help me understand what's happening today by putting it into a historic context. Masonry. Do you see the parallels with Masonry? We aren't what we were. Once upon a time, Masonry was that cutting edge. Wasn't clinging to the past. It was reveling in new thought, new discovery. Bit redundant to say that, Dale. You're stating the obvious. Discussions brought together the arts and sciences. The evolution of the seven liberal arts and sciences was occurring. Great thinkers were able to sit down and discover one another. We had that in the Royal Society, and I still think that the Royal Society had a significant role in the intellectual development of Freemasonry. What we read about isn't so much pictures of ghosts on walls, all the austere gentlemen whose name has been lost to us, who are presented to us as symbols of achievement. But I don't know if that's the ticket to a good life. I don't know that. You may say that. You may want me to follow in the very footsteps of those men, except they are different. They had different history. I don't think a life is nearly as simple as you would make it out to be. Just follow the act. It's almost like that theory, that fantastical thinking a couple of years ago, that if you think good things are going to happen to you, think good things will happen to you. That was that was very cruel to people that are starving. Very, very cruel. Such an elitist kind of a... It's come and gone. So perhaps you don't agree. Maybe you do. You see, the thinking here is, well, so what? What if we are a universe following a parallel track as Venice? Venice still has influence. Venice still attracts people. You come away with an experience. But even as we see the city sink, we are inspired by the artwork and the places that housed people of significance. It's not the ghost on the wall, it's what the ghosts on the wall did that is inspiring. And we get to see it unvarnished. Unvarnished. As good historians and antiquarians, our history, the history that we study, isn't selected. That's what governments do. That's what militaries do. They select to create reasoning for whatever position they're trying to achieve. The antiquarian, the Masonic antiquarian, looks at it all. It's the only way we can, out of a belief that this is the only way that we can progress, by looking at all of our history, good, the bad, and the ugly, and make the necessary adjustments and corrections as we go along by learning by our past mistakes. So then, if we're thinking about masonry as the relic, do you think of Venice as a relic? Well, in a sense it is. In a sense it is. If we go to St. Paul's Cathedral, is that a relic? Well, it's a monument, isn't it? It's a statement. It's evidence. Now, let's be generous and be a little more truthful with ourselves, gentlemen. Freemasonry isn't something concrete. Try saying that it's all about happiness without ever giving a person an opportunity to actually study what happiness is dumbing down the order. Yeah, so I absolutely think that we've done that. There's no question. And have there been influences, cause and effect, chains of cause and effect playing on that? Yes. And some of those influences have been beyond our control? Yes. We're into something very complicated, and yet we see the truth and we see the light when we can step sideways and look at all the complications and smile to ourselves and say, all of that, the tribulations, the successes, that false bravado, the temper tantrums that make us all seem ridiculous. It's all part of our growth. All part of our development. And then what truly makes us smile is that we know that out of all of this, we have made good friends. People that we can absolutely trust, that can actually anticipate us, that know us. That's something that's incredibly important. Incredibly important. And so worthwhile. So this, I think, I offer up to you the brain trust of the fraternity. Is there a parallel? I think there is. I think there is. And there's room for discussion and debate, my goodness. But I only offer this up because it seems to give some answers, some direction. We can't interrupt the passage of the influence of history. We can't. We can't revise history. But today, there's nothing stopping us except ourselves, our lack of conviction, nothing stopping us from embracing that innovative spirit of creativity, the sound of intelligent men discussing profound and important ideas. Nobody ever said that's what every Mason was doing. But if history is going to judge us as it has our ancient brethren. Today, we could say, well, that person, that silent person that was just happy to dress up and get drunk and fall down, didn't really make a contribution. Well, in his way, I guess it's like looking at masonry as if it's a relic. It seems that if that's all you get out of it, it's such a shame, because you can have that kind of a good time just going to a ball game or being with your mates, sitting around, shooting the breeze, playing a hand of cards. Nothing at all wrong with that. But for masonry, it's that opportunity, isn't it? It's that rare, rare opportunity. And anybody coming up to you should be able to ask you what it is. And if all you've got is something like a bumper sticker, "We make good men better," that's all you got? 300 years of history, that's all you got? And yes, I think it's appalling, but that's the way I was brought up. You know, what do we do? We're clinging to these dilapidated buildings. You're putting lipstick on a pig here, boys. You're not thinking about the bigger picture because you don't have to. All you got to do is take care of yourself. But every aspect of what we do reflects on us. Does that part of Venice count? Yeah, it does, no matter what small community. Remember, as we get closer to 2050, 2060, 2070, more than half of the world will be living in cities, because that's where the energy and the action is. Sentimentalists, the bus for the sentimentalists is over there, line up over there. The conveyor belt to the future is right underneath your feet. That's what's dragging us forward. That's an energy. Undeniable. We're grown men. When did we start fretting about change? Oh my, I can't take it. Really? Really? So you're all going to hand in your power steering and your power brakes, because we all liked the old Buick when it didn't have power brakes. Oh my, are you serious? Anyway, that's my, I don't know if that's really a rant, but it's my some ideas that I like to you to think about a little bit, just a little. Don't get you're delicate. We don't want you to get too over the top. You know how you are when you're over the top. You start to act like you know what you're thinking about, and then that's partly the reason we're happily with partner, to remind us that we're really never that clever. Given an environment, you need to hear about paired opposites, don't you? Paired opposites, that little universe, that bubble of all kinds of masons, what, about 3 or 4 million of us crammed inside of it, floating around in the universe, just looking around. And some of us are the parties going on, and we're just dancing the jig, and that's all we need. And then others are saying, where in the world are we going? And what energy source is moving us around? What energy source is moving masonry right now, gentlemen? Escaping into the past. Ooh, rather unpleasant, don't you think? We used to do much better than that. Given an environment, I'm just going to talk a little bit about paired opposites, and they're held in balance by a coordinating agency. You could be a coordinating agency. Oh, and a little shout out to all the paired heads. And just because I know you're out there, and if anything symbolizes brotherhood, of course, I was influenced by the 60s and 70s, and it's been downhill ever since. But given an environment in which paired opposites are held in balance by a coordinating agency, those tools seem to be a functional model of morality. So says W. Kirk McNulty in his article on the craft and the Western metaphysical tradition. Love this stuff. Now, if you're not ready for this, you're not drinking enough. I know I'm going to burst into flames here, but you know what I mean. Get into that groove before you continue to listen to this part of the program. Just get into that space, and we'll keep this part of the meal really short. Considering the perfect Ashler, and I know I'm there. I go talking about boilerplate things. A standard against which to calibrate tools of morality. The suggestion, here we get into the meaning, that the perfect Ashler represents one's conscience. The fact that all these things are found in an interior middle chamber within your own being, that middle chamber, your conscience, seems to suggest the middle chamber represents one's soul. Now here's where I think Masonry opens us up to an interesting way of thinking about that natural connection with the universe that we talked about earlier. All this happens in the place where one receives his wages, and the ritual indicates that the wages are fair. This seems to indicate that there is an agency within us that ensures that as we live our life, we get what we deserve. A symbolic representation of the comment of the great light. Remember, I'll whisper this to you. Shh. Whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Shh. Don't tell anyone. Oh, you mean that's out there in all of the major faiths of the world? Oh, I'm sorry. Gee, I thought that was owned by a male fraternal order. The fact that all this takes place within one's own being is worth thinking about. It gives us an interesting insight into the attitude and intent of people who formulated this Masonic system of morality. That, I think, is the brilliance. They formulated it. They created the bus, but they didn't say don't drive it. They did. They did a darn good job with this vehicle, you know, this flying machine. But they didn't say, don't go and explore. They didn't say, park it and keep it washed and never use it. What do you think they gave us these tools for? For goodness sakes, they gave us these tools to build something, to move ahead. Ugh. From the psychological point of view, it could be said that the achievement of the second degree, as the Jungian psychologist would say, the individuation of one's self. Individuation of one's self. Remember the second degree, that thing that sort of looks like it was made of all the scraps of other interesting degrees and ritual? Seems to be a patchwork quilt. Well, it's one worth taking a serious look at. Hang it on the wall and step back and take a look. Jungian individuation of one's self. I'll explain that. One becomes a freestanding, here's the free and Freemason, I hope. One becomes a freestanding, independent human being. That's the individuation. You're not leaning, you're not making excuses. Boo-hoo, I would have I could have been a somebody, except I wasn't born into the gentry. Or I was born with blue eyes instead of brown. One still may do what his mother told him to do, but he no longer does it because of her authority. Now he does it because he is able to evaluate the situation, decide what is the right course of action, and agrees that his mother is correct. The fellowcraft lives his own life. The message of the tracing board and the degree in the second. Live your own life. Think about it. How about enough. We'll get brain cramps if we do too much. We're not that practiced at thinking this much. Take a deep breath, huh? I'm glad that I was able to sit down and share a drink and a laugh and we could talk back and forth about this. It's an interesting world we live in, and we live in interesting times. But Masonry doesn't really owe you and I anything. We owe our brethren more time to study so that they are able to... We do confuse a lot of the fellows because we're pushing. It's not their needs that are important. It's the need... It's our needs. Our needs to get those numbers moving. It's like that MTV song that was out in the 70s. You know? Just crank them out. It's not a production line. It's a process. And we're leaving a lot of the product falling off onto the ground half done with serious and legitimate questions in mind. I'm not going to talk to anybody or remind anybody about what the deal is. We're failing at that deal. Failing terribly. We are sitting on this universe of ideas. It's the real metaphysics. It's the real imagination. We go slowly. If the Chinese have taught us anything, we don't need to have... The hasty answer is only useful for hasty questions. Here, we want to draw on the man's imagination to help understand and to answer some of the questions, because without imagination applied to Masonic ethics and principles, it's not possible to answer the questions. You have been an absolute treat. Like, imagine how bad off I am when I have to say that the likes of you guys are an absolute treat to be with. Oh, you're a real knee slapper. Seriously, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're taking care of your soul. I hope you're taking care of your imagination. I hope you're nurturing yourself. But remember, we're not half as clever as we think we are. If we want to be really good friends, we hone and develop the art of listening. I'm not nearly there. I talk far too much. If any of this makes sense, it makes sense to you. And I look forward to joining you again. I'm still on this friendship kick with all the music. It's like, why didn't I think about this before? Well, it took 5 years. It's just been going on we've been doing this since December 2010, haven't we, together? And some of you have been here with me that long. Wonderful. I love you guys. But the theme is that we're in this together. We're friends. So, and friends, sometimes we sulk, sometimes we embarrass ourselves, but at the end of the day, and then there's some that are just knuckleheads, you know, and they'll think I'm a knucklehead too. But I want to put you in that frame of mind as we step out into our everyday real world. To carry yourself with some inspiration, even if you're tired and you're distracted and, oh my, I'm under stress, I've got 5 things to do. So what? Everybody's stressed. Suck it up, buttercup. We do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there's no path and leave a trail. To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment. Those are the forces, eh? What lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside you. You're beautiful. Love of beauty is taste. The creation of beauty is art. So to a shout out, a nod to all of the artists out there amongst you. Thank you for tuning in. It's privilege to have each of you here. In this time of year, as Ralph Waldo Emerson noticed, the earth laughs in flowers. Though we travel the world over to find the beautiful, we must carry it with us or we find it not. Be the Mason. You are the Mason. Be that beautiful part of existence. That courage when there's doubt. Don't be flapping a little hands in the air saying, oh my goodness, the sky's falling. Really? You can handle... I like that line, that quote that I've often heard, God never gives you more than you can handle. I like that somehow. For every minute we remain angry, we give up 60 seconds of peace of mind. You know what they'd say about, you know, how dare they suggest, those damn Greeks suggest that we live like dogs. Well, dogs shake off a bad time really fast, don't they? Do we really need a Greek philosopher to notice that and tell us? Oh, we're much better because we can carry the baggage because it's so much more clever. Oh, my goodness. You cannot do a kindness too soon, for you never know how soon it will be too late. My goodness, it's Emerson on today. See you soon. Thanks for hanging out. Friends.
What would you think if I sang gratitude? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key.
That's
forever.